The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. Before beginning our program, we would like to invite you to sign up for a free trial subscription to one of our publications at irei.com. Whether you are interested in real estate, infrastructure, or real assets in general, IREI has a publication to suit your needs. Select Publications on the main menu to choose a publication. Interested in more than one? Sign up for them all.
You know, they really learn a tremendous amount about each other and what their issues are, and they learn a tremendous amount about what the agendas are for the investors. And just knowing that gives them a leg up in helping to fashion solutions that will address the major concerns and issues that the investors are facing.
That is the voice of Jeff Dorman speaking about the upcoming editorial advisory board meeting for Institutional Real Estate Americas. For the September 2019 Dorman Report, Jeff and I talked about how long these meetings have been going on, how the dialogue among investors and managers has changed over the years, who participates in these meetings, what some of the topics will be at the upcoming fall meeting, and what he anticipates the overall tone will be vis-a-vis past years. So without further delay, here is my conversation with IREI founder and CEO, Jeffrey Dorman. Coming up, Jeff, you have an editorial advisory board meeting scheduled to be held at Cape Natick in Maine, the beautiful Maine coast, I'm assuming. Is this an effort to escape climate change or to be near Kennebunkport where there's some political leverage, or is it just a grand place to have a meeting?
Well, it is a grand place to have a meeting, you know, and the other thing is we're going to be driving from Boston to Cape Natick through the Fall Color show, which I've never seen, which is going to be a fun experience. We're trying now to have a board meeting on the West Coast and one on the East Coast because it's easier for folks on the East Coast to get to an East Coast location than it is to come all out West. And so what we end up doing is drawing a slightly different crowd and therefore getting more representation on the board, which is what we love to do. And the reason we're in Maine is since we're doing this in the fall, we're smack in the middle of hurricane season. As you may remember last year, we had to relocate because of the hurricane that was smacking into the Carolina coast. And right now there's another hurricane smacking into the Carolina coast. So I think it was the right move.
Which actually, though, that weather system is so big. My understanding is it's so big that all the way up, I think even including Maine, has had cloud coverage and not rain and not wind, but no danger, of course. But I understand the weather system is just so enormous that it's actually spreading cloud coverage and probably some precipitation and windy conditions right up through the New England states. Although, as you're saying, New England in the fall with a little extra precipitation, maybe it's just going to be gorgeous. So yeah. I envy you being able to take that drive up north, the flight and the drive. Let's talk a little bit about, for the sake of new listeners, and we do have a lot of new listeners, as we look at the statistics, we see there are a lot of people who are coming to the podcast and videos who haven't been there before. I think just largely because they've just recognized that we produce these things and we produce them in great numbers and with a lot of interesting topics. So for those who are new to this whole channel, what about the editorial advisory board meeting? Talk a little bit about how long we've been doing them and what they are.
Well, we've been doing them since 1991, so we've been doing them a long time, 28 years. And this is the 19th annual fall board meeting. And the 47th Americas board meeting. We also do board meetings in the Asia-Pacific region and the European region, and we do them for our infrastructure publication. And we just recently completed a board meeting for our Real Asset Advisor platform. So we do a lot of these throughout the year.
In the dialogue at these meetings, I know it's changed over the years. I mean, as you said, you stop and look back at how many years you've been doing them, how many meetings there's been, and then you think about all the changes that you have seen, that IREI as a company has seen over those years. What about the dialogue at these meetings, and you know, what have you learned from listening to the participants and facilitating these dialogues?
Well, first, it might help to just kind of frame who the participants are. The investment manager participants are representatives from each of the sponsors of our publication. So in the Americas, for example, we have 80 sponsors. So we have two board meetings, one in the fall and one in the spring. And we'll have 40 sponsors at each of those board meetings. And then the sponsors will help us understand, you know, we invite people that we think will add to the dialogue. We also ask advice from our sponsors to recommend people to come to the board meeting who they think might be able to contribute to the dialogue. And the whole purpose of it is to help the investors help us understand what are the issues that are keeping them up at night with respect to the management of their portfolios. What are the biggest concerns that they have? And so by listening to, first of all, just paying attention to the topics that they suggest, because the topics actually come from the investors and the consultants and the investment managers who are participating in the board meeting, helps us understand, you know, the issues that we really need to be addressing in the pages of the publications. But during the course of the meeting, we actually get into interactive roundtable discussions, either as a group or sometimes we break into smaller groups and then report back to the large group the findings of the smaller groups on a whole variety of topics that these folks have suggested. So, you know, it really is fascinating to sit in that room and listen to the quality of the dialogue and the intensity of the issues. You can sometimes get a read from how actively people are debating particular issues, which issues have the highest gut value in terms of really triggering people's emotional response to issues that they're facing and running their portfolios. And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to make sure that the issues that we're covering in the publication are issues that will really resonate with them, that really be meaningful to them, and that they really care about, care deeply about.
So let's go a little deeper on that, because we can obviously see the benefit to our organization, because we're a news organization, we're a data organization, and they're really kind of filling us up with the topics of the day and the kind of information we need and the kind of direction we need. What do they get out of these meetings? Now, as you already said, that we have coverage that they eat up. But beyond that, there are some other dimensions to the benefit for the participants. So why don't you elaborate on that a little bit?
I think, you know, for all the participants, they get to connect with each other. And that's something that's awful hard to do in the course of normal business relationships. Usually, if you're going to fly out to visit with an investor or a consultant, you're going to get maybe an hour, maybe 2 hours at the most. And it's really oftentimes not enough time to really develop the kind of deep connections that really lead to productive business relationships. And by coming and participating in this meeting, the participants are going to spend typically 30 hours together, either at meals or at breakfasts or at lunches or in activities or in roundtable discussions. They're really getting to know each other from a number of different angles, on a personal and on a business level. And they're going to learn how each other think and how they're looking at issues and what's on their minds. And that's invaluable. For an investor, it helps them understand how their peers are thinking and how their peers are addressing similar problems. Sometimes the way their peers are addressing them are completely different than the way they're addressing them, which doesn't necessarily always lead to a change in their perspective. It may cause them to get a stronger position in what they're doing because they're listening to what other people are doing and thinking, those guys are nuts, right? Or sometimes they're thinking, wow, that's an interesting idea. We should be thinking that way as well. So there's lots of things that come out of it for the investors. For the consultants and the investment managers that attend, you know, they really learn a tremendous amount about each other and what their issues are, and they learn a tremendous amount about what the agendas are for the investors. And just knowing that gives them a leg up in helping to fashion solutions that will address the major concerns and issues that the investors are facing. Because after all, long term, the investment managers are really in business to help the investors accomplish their own funds objectives. And this is a way for the investment managers to get a much clearer understanding about what those issues are, what those objectives are, and how they can be more useful to the investment community. So I think everybody ends up getting a tremendous amount out of it. And of course, our editors learn what we should be writing about. So everybody gets some value out of coming.
You know, when we say editorial advisory board, and we have got several of them, as you said, I think people tend to think, you know, a dozen people or maybe 20 people. But our boards are actually very large. I mean, Real Assets Advisor magazine has 50. And yet our institutional magazine, such as America's, has, what, 80 or 100 members? Why are the boards so large? What's the point of having so many participants?
Well, it's the interaction between the participants and the discussions between the participants that helps you get a deep understanding of what the issues are. If it was just, you know, 5 or 6 or 10 people, it would only represent 5 or 6 or 10 people, and those people might not be fully representative of our entire readership. Let's face it, I mean, our readership is global. Our readership is comprised of public pension funds, corporate pension funds, foundations, endowments, Taft-Hartley pension funds, sovereign wealth funds, life and companies, and other family offices. So, you know, when you take over all that, you need to really have good representation, and you need to have enough people from the different sectors to really get a clear picture of how the differences are evolving in terms of the viewpoints and positions and concerns and the priorities of each of these different sectors. So that's part of the reason why we do it that way. And the other thing is we've really capped it. In the U.S., we won't take on more than 80 sponsors because we won't allow the board to become much larger than 80 participants. Sometimes it goes up to 90 or 95 when you add the consultants in. But the whole idea is to have a one-to-one, what we kind of euphemistically refer to as our tick-to-dog ratio, to create a comfortable environment for the investors to really talk to each other and also interact with the consultant and an investment management community. Once you get up beyond that number, it's just too overwhelming for the investors to really have any substantive conversations with anybody. And it feels kind of intimidating. I think when you start to get into meetings with lots and, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people, the investors start to feel like, you know, a deer in the Gary Larson cartoon where the other deer goes, "Bummer of a birthmark, man." You look over at the other deer and he's got a target painted on his chest. That's kind of how the investors often feel trying to walk through a crowded room where the ratios can be 11 to 15 to 20 to 1, and it's just not comfortable for them. So we're committed to a one-to-one ratio, and we're committed to keeping it large enough to get real meaningful dialogue going, but small enough that we maintain a certain degree of intimacy. And it's possible at our editorial board meetings for every single person in that room to come away after the 2.5 days to really know everybody that's present there on a first name basis. And that's kind of the objective that we set out for all the participants when we open up the meeting.
So this meeting coming up next week, you already know what kind of topics are going to be on the agenda, because this stuff is kind of set in motion ahead of time. Talk a little bit about how the topics for discussion are developed for the meeting.
Well, again, you know, what we do is we ask all the participants to suggest topics. And most do, some don't. But it's an opportunity to make sure that the agenda that's set for the discussions really reflects the issues that are topmost of their mind. And it's really interesting if you took a list of, and then what we do is we compile them all into something we call food for thought, which is a 3 to 4 page sheet that summarizes each of the topics we're going to be discussing. And then again, during the meeting, you know, we'll break into small groups and hand each group a topic to discuss, or we'll do a group growth where the entire group is focusing on a specific topic and we'll just get into roundtable. And the whole thing here is it's nobody's making presentations. It's all people discussing and trying to answer the questions. So for example, let's take the first topic on this year's food for thought is core versus opportunistic. And then underneath it, there'll be a whole series of sub questions. So first sub question is, what is the most attractive segment of the real estate market currently, core value or opportunistic? The second sub question is, what are your recommendations regarding new capital allocations by strategy within this point of the real estate and economic cycle? Are you strategically overweighted core or non-core or other key strategies? And then the third subtopic is investors. What is your core value add split? As returns for value add and core plus strategies converge, how are you thinking about the appropriate level of risk for what is a similar, if not the same, return? And the fourth subcategory is, how are the investors thinking about core plus investment strategies today? Is core plus a useful risk return categorization? If so, what are its hallmark characteristics? If it's more or less attractive in today's market than core and value-added strategies, in what way? And then final subtopic is, what opportunistic strategies do you find compelling in today's market? What's the expected net return? What types of benchmarks are you and your consultants using for non-core real estate investments? So out of that will come even more questions, and even more dialogue and discussions will flow from that. And that's just one out of maybe 15 different topics that we'll be exploring during the meeting, but it gives you an idea about how we get at the issues.
Mm-hmm.
The investors and managers frame these topics for us, and then we kind of pull all that thought together and put them into something that's digestible so they can think about it before they come. So they're not coming to the meeting cold, not knowing what they're going to talk about. They come to the meeting armed with this sheet so they understand and can think about it before they come, about how they want to respond to some of these questions.
You know, and in addition to what they actually say, the actual content of their statements, I know you pay a lot of attention, as do our editors, to tone, the tone that they take. And one of the reasons I ask about tone is because, one of the participants famously said a couple of years ago, everything's going great, but we're not having any fun. It was something to that effect, because everybody's been very tentative since the global recession that we had. And now, as you go into this meeting, we're seeing some very distinct evidence that there really is a downturn underway. So what do you expect that tone to be like, both from that standpoint and maybe some other standpoints that you're aware of?
Well, tone has been kind of interesting. It depends on where you are around the globe. Europeans and Asians are still spending a lot of time talking about where we are in the cycle. I think the American constituents are kind of fed up talking about cycles. It's kind of like we've been talking about cycles for 5 years now, and everybody seems to be able to think that they can predict where we are in the cycle, but so far we don't really even know how long a cycle really is. This cycle has gone much longer than the normal real estate cycle, if there is such a thing. So rather than talk about that, let's just talk about how do you evaluate risk, and where do you see opportunity? And that's more kind of the tone of where we are right now. Now, I will expect that there will be some more concerns about end of cycle type discussions at this meeting, because there have been some signals, yield curve inversion and some of the employment numbers being as high as they are, all are things that are giving rise to concerns. So I expect that there'll be more discussion this time than there perhaps was in the last time about end of cycle type issues.
And Jeff, I apologize to you and our listeners if there's some background noise. There's a crew of men doing some roofing, so apologies if there's any background noise on the recording. Jeff, just in summary, you're heading out to Maine. You got the meeting up in Natick, Maine, and you were talking earlier about how. Well, I asked you, how has the dialogue changed over the years? Because again, this has been going on for some decades now.
Yeah.
And then there are some new issues that have come up that just didn't exist in the past. Things such as climate change construction that's resistant to weather conditions, to extreme weather conditions, and so on. What are some of the topics? That's obviously one of them, but are there a few other topics that you would cite that are big on the agenda these days, but were non-existent 10, 20 years ago?
Well, lots of things have changed from 20 years ago and 30 years ago. One of the topics that's going to be discussed is niche property types. And just the definition of what a niche property type is something that constantly is being redefined. If you go back to the very first board meeting that was occurred back in those days, it wasn't even clear that apartments were considered to be a core property type. Back then, they were still considered to be kind of niche. And a lot of people didn't have exposure to apartments. And some people were even questioning whether apartments really belong in an institutional portfolio. Well, we've come a long way from there. There almost isn't any kind of property type that isn't in somebody's institutional portfolio today. And so, you know, lately, probably for the last 5 years, people have been talking a lot at these meetings about the role of niche properties, and mostly what they're looking for are demographically driven strategies that will insulate you perhaps from some of the downturn that would occur, or downdrafts that would occur when we enter into an economic recession. And a lot of people today are talking about the fact that we're already in an economic recession. Other people argue, no, you're misreading the tea leaves. But we're obviously approaching some kind of inflection point, because you don't have these kind of discussions unless you're achieving some kind of inflection point. So, you know, people like things like senior housing, student housing, self-storage, and other types of property types that tend to be driven more by demographic trends than they are driven by economic trends. And I expect to hear more discussion about that. As a matter of fact, I know that's one of the topics that people will be discussing at this particular meeting that they absolutely would not have been talking about 20 or 30 years ago, because they weren't considered to be appropriate for institutional portfolios. A lot has changed.
Okay, Jeff. Well, as you know, I grew up in the Northeast, so I know what you're in for just in terms of the fall colors and all. And it's going to be a great time, I'm sure. So as I say, I'm envious that you'll be in the midst of it. Have a great time at the meeting, and thanks for the roundup.
Great. Thank you. Take care.